The wave of Arab revolution has swept from North Africa to the Kingdom of Bahrain. But unlike Egypt and Tunisia, the Bahraini army brutally suppressed peaceful protest. Now questions are being asked of Britain's role in arming and training its former colony. Does Britain have a case to answer?
Still, their relation with Britain is very, very strong, especially the current king, Hamad bin Isa.
The finances of the country are very much a part of the big picture that's overseen from the Treasury and the Bank of England in London. The military and political and intelligence cooperation remains acute.
Both the UK and the US have had a very strong hold over Bahraini politics, its future, its policies. It's a strategic base. It's got huge oil wealth.
Manama, Bahrain. Inspired by the wave of Arab revolution, pro-democracy campaigners march towards the Bahraini army and meet a brutal response. Now questions are being asked of Britain's role in propping up the repressive Bahraini regime. Only a week before demonstrators were killed on the streets of Manama, the Bahraini Prime Minister bought this £43 million house in central London. Now it's clear the Bahraini royal family feel at home here. But is their relationship with Britain just too close for comfort? Britain has many historic links to the region, doesn't it?
Britain is the one who kept it in the hands of Al Khalifa for the last 200 years. They always went and support this clan by many treaties, and they kept this ruling family against the wish of the people and against all values which Britain believes in. And of course, Bahrain took its independence from the British in 1971, so it's very recent. But still, their relation with Britain is very, very strong, especially the current king, Hamad bin Isa.
How cozy is the relationship between the British establishment and the Bahraini royal family?
It's very close. In banking, for example, and Bahrain's wealth is to a very large extent based on banking. That banking is governed by the Bank of England. The finances of the country are very much a part of the big picture that's overseen from the Treasury and the Bank of England in London. The military and political and intelligence cooperation remains acute. The personal relationships between Old Etonian and Sandhurst Tory ministers and the Crown Prince of Bahrain is well known. Once when I was attacking the Crown Prince of Bahrain in a speech in the House of Commons, the Tory minister, Sir Nicholas Soames, said that I was being very harsh, and he knew the Crown Prince very well. He'd gone to Eton with him. That's how close these people are, part of the same nexus of Britain's old colonial old boys club. But their time's running out. By the grace of God, they are not much longer to be ruling over that stricken nation.
Is Britain complicit in any of this?
Britain has had a long history with Bahrain. It was the colonial power. It has really kind of kept the Khalifa family in its pocket after independence, which is only sort of 40-odd years ago. Mm-hmm. And subsequently, the US has been involved. They've based their Fifth Fleet in Bahrain. And both the UK and the US have had a very strong hold over Bahraini politics, its future, its policies. It's a strategic base. It's got huge oil wealth, which is bound up in so much of the narrative in the Middle East. Britain itself has been very complicit in the sense that not only has it supported the regime verbally and financially and so on and so forth, It's even been very involved in terms of training its security forces. So you will find that a lot of the atrocities that have been committed by the police and security services over this last 40 years in Bahrain have been done under the guidance of British-trained personnel, notably in Henderson.
Britain's military links to Bahrain are close. Even the Bahraini king was trained at the elite Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst, along with many of his army officers.
You've paid a personal price for your involvement in this organization as a member of the opposition. What's happened to you?
Every Bahraini has paid a price varying in degree. Some people paid the ultimate price of being killed in the streets as recent as 4 or 5 days ago with the latest addition to the list of martyrs, Rida Abu Hamid. And those people who were killed in the 80s were numerous. And in the 90s, we had about 40 in the 90s, and either under torture or through extrajudicial killing in the streets. And now in the latest revolution, we had people killed and more than 500 injured in the clashes, in the attacks, not clashes, but attacks by the riot police and the special forces on the demonstrators. My personal experience has been similar to many. Of course, being in the leading role, I would be targeted all the time. I have always been targeted with media smearing campaigns, with accusations of unfounded claims that I had been planning to overthrow the regime or dealing with foreign bodies and foreign governments. This has been going on since 1980 when I was first accused of the involvement in the internal troubles. So I had problems. I had been charged several times. I was sentenced in absentia in 1996 and accused of belonging to terrorist organizations. In this country, in UK, I was held and arrested because of the encouragement of Bahraini government, especially at the time of the British Colonel Ian Henderson, who had established the special branch and systematized the torture practice in Bahrain. And then lastly, I was implicated in the most recent claim that there has been a coup plot and sedition and communication with outside bodies 6 months ago. So anyone who puts himself in a direct challenge to dictatorships will always find himself or herself targeted by them.
Is Britain complicit in any of this?
It is not easy to establish the direct role of the British in Bahrain in these days. Of course, in the past, we know that they have had good relations with the regime for 150 years, between 1820 when they signed the first anti-piracy treaty with the Gulf sheikhs, including Bahrain, until 1971 when they departed and left the region. We know that in 1966, the late Sir Anthony Parsons, who was later to become the UK ambassador to the United Nations, and who was at some time the ambassador to Tehran and also the political agent in Bahrain, he was the one who employed Ian Henderson and brought him from Devon to Bahrain to establish the special branch, which became flagrant in its treatment of Bahrainis and institutionalized torture as a means of dealing with the dissidents. So this goes back to some time ago, but Henderson was there until 2000 when he retired. But we also know later and until now, our belief is that there are many experts and consultants who work behind the scenes in various ministries in Bahrain.
Colonel Sir Ian Henderson was knighted for his service to the Bahraini secret police. Now his brutal methods are an embarrassment to the British government. Former MP George Galloway has campaigned against Henderson's secret role for decades.
What did the British government know about Colonel Henderson's activities in Bahrain?
Oh, well, they knew everything. I mean, Bahrain was ruled by the British until 1971, which is after the Beatles split up. I mean, it's not exactly ancient history. The British involvement in Bahrain and indeed elsewhere in that region continued after the flag was run down. And of course, people like Henderson were in place partly as agents of the British. I'm sure that their wages were being paid by the Bahrainis, but they were, of course, reporting back to the British, and they were keeping Bahrain safe for British and later American imperial interests. So the British could not in any way claim that they did not know the kind of man that Colonel Ian Henderson was, because, of course, he had been that kind of man in their employ, ferociously torturing Kenyan prisoners who were doing no more than fighting for the independence of their country.
So why is nothing being done? I mean, he's allowed to live in cozy retirement.
Yes, I don't know if he's in England or in Bahrain. I heard a day or two ago that he's back in Bahrain, which surprised me a little. And if he is, I very much doubt if he's sitting out these current events. I'm sure that he'll be whispering in the ear of the dictatorship there in Bahrain. But if he is back in England, he's clearly here with impunity, and he ought to be on trial. We changed the law in Britain so that we could prosecute people who committed acts of torture and other acts against humanity in foreign countries. And if there was ever a candidate for such a trial, it would be Colonel Ian Henderson.
You mentioned Ian Henderson. Who is he? What do we know about him?
Well, Mr. Henderson has a very long pedigree of this type of behaviour. He was, in fact, implicated in criminal acts on behalf of the British services in Kenya during the uprising in the 50s and 60s and so on. Subsequently, he appeared in Bahrain, and whilst, obviously, the British would never say that he was sanctioned to be there on their behalf, he is ultimately there as somebody who's had that training, who's been part of the British security services at one time or another. And he led a very bloody regime. We're talking about him having full oversight of what was going on, which included quite extreme cases of torture. We have had the worst types of torture, whether it's water torture or using electric shocks on people's genitalia and so on and so forth. All the things that we heard about and condemned in Iraq going on completely under the radar in Bahrain with very little sort of international concern, headed by a British national who actually is now back in Bahrain after he retired because, having come to this country, found himself under threat of prosecution by various members of civil society trying to actually bring him to account for his crimes.
Of course, you mentioned commerce there, but one of Bahrain's biggest trading partners with arms is Britain. Very worrying times.
Very worrying times. I mean, Bahrain is just one of the many countries that have done a lot of trade with Britain on the issue, you know, with regard to arms. And we now see deployment against civilians. Actually, with Bahrain, we've been seeing that for a while now. There have been disturbances over the years. The tear gas, the water cannons, and all the things that were bought from the United Kingdom have been used against Bahraini protesters or dissidents or however you like to describe them. And sadly, it's not one of the sort of more exciting stories, so it passes under the radar. It's not really in the interests of the British or American establishments to highlight what's going on, because Bahrain is a key ally in the region.
Another embarrassment for the UK is the fact that Britain is a major supplier of arms to the repressive Bahraini security forces.
2009, we sold around £3 million worth of weapons. In 2010, up till September, we sold around £5 million. So it's a rising amount of weapons. Once again, we can't say precisely what weapons were sold or what companies were selling them, but we do know those weapons did include things like tear gas, submachine guns, assault cannons, and sniper rifles, for example. They're all weapons that you use primarily in internal repression rather than for external defence.
But when they got these licences, are any of the provisions that they're for defence of the country as opposed to things that are clearly there to repress the population?
Well, one of the criteria for exports is that weapons should not be sold if they're likely to be used mainly for internal repression. And no weapons licenses to Bahrain were refused last year. It would be very rare for them to be refused because UK trade and investment sees Bahrain as a priority market for arms sales. So it would be very unusual if they were to start refusing licenses.
Are you concerned by the sales of British arms to Bahrain?
I am seriously concerned by the Western sales of arms to Bahrain, especially those by Britain, and especially after the facts have come to light that some of those arms were used recently in the recent crackdown against demonstrators, including the use of tear gas canisters at close range that led to at least one death, one confirmed death. And that is really a serious escalation. You cannot sell arms for internal repressions. I was really disturbed when I saw the tanks rolling along the highway near the Paris Square during the crackdown. And the ruler was, I'm sure he must have been given a green light to allow these arms to be used, which are supposed to be for defense against external aggression, not for internal repression. So I am concerned by the running and the juggling for arms sales to the Middle East, especially to those oil-rich Gulf countries. Bahrain is not rich, that rich, and I think instead of spending this money on arms against an imaginable and not real enemy attack from outside, they should spend it more on internal development, providing housing, employing the youth, and educating more the people. The British have failed to ensure that their arms are not used to against the people of Bahrain. And David Cameron's recent trip to the Middle East has only confirmed the suspicions that the West is more inclined to sell arms and more eager to sell arms rather than protecting the lives of innocent people who are calling for democracy. Democracy is supposed to be their motto and their international slogan, but little is being done to support it and to prop it up. And even when pro-democracy activists are slaughtered in the streets of Bahrain, a few tears are shed by those politicians.
Britain has significant trade links with Bahrain, including the sale of arms to the country. Do you think this has had an impact at all?
Again, Bahrain is a small island with very small population. Of course, the people are aspiring to live in a free society under democratic rule. And Bahrain doesn't have enemies to have weapons and all that. But of course, the ruling family is getting all these weapons from Britain and the United States. And we saw in the last uprising, it's to use it against their own people. The tyrant of Bahrain really committed crimes against humanity by asking his army and the tanks to go in the street, surround the people, and kill some of the protesters while they were sleeping one day near dawn without any warning. So it's a cold-blooded murder committed by the army of the king to come the next day and offer his condolences for those who died. And really, if I was near him, I would tell him they did not die naturally. They were killed, and they were killed by you, so you have got blood in your hands. Don't play innocent and offer condolences after committing the murder. And he should listen to his people. You know, those tyrants in actually the Middle East are really unique among the tyrants of the world. Because people are rebelling, trying to push them out of their seats, but they are hanging on by their teeth. Even if they kill all the population and make a bloodbath, they don't care as long as they keep their regime and their rule in place.
Is Britain choosy in criticizing some human rights record in the Middle East, but not others?
I think most Western countries are choosy and selective. They would, for years, they had ignored the plight of our people, in the Middle East, especially in Bahrain. They would not do anything. In the 90s, we have sent them many, many letters and reports about what was happening to our brothers and sisters inside the Al Khalifa jails. But they would go and criticize China and Soviet Union and Iran for claims that we do not know about how serious they were. But where we had presented them with the incontroversial and incontrovertible evidence, they failed to act. They did not want, they have refused to see anyone, any victim of torture who came here, and we, for whom a meeting we requested with the Foreign Office or with anyone from the government, but they have not done so. They have not accepted or agreed to see anyone from the serious opposition, from the, especially those who have been tortured by the regime. They had established an annual report on human rights for the past 7 or 8 or 10 years, but that report is just shallow compared to the State Department's report of the United States, which gave cases and names and was more thorough and more open. Of course, the Americans are more forthcoming in terms of human rights, although they don't act upon them, but at least they highlight their concerns to a with a degree of objectivity. Despite their selectivity in dealing with the various countries, but at least they mention, the bad human rights records of, say, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, but they wouldn't act upon this, upon their own findings and their own assertions.
Britain's always been very vocal about democracy and human rights, especially in that region. But they seem to pick and choose the cases. Why do we think this is?
Sadly, the rhetoric of democracy and human rights has been used very cynically by the United Kingdom, despite under the previous government talking about having an ethical foreign policy and so on and so forth. Sadly, until that changes, until they start talking consistently about political representation, political participation, you know, people having a right not to be tortured, and being consistent in the application of it, then, you know, they're not really going to have a lot of friends on the ground either in those countries that they're, you know, pontificating to, or frankly amongst, you know, people who are working for human rights around the world. It is a very obvious hypocritical stance that they've taken. They will promote minor issues in some countries, inflate it as a huge issue, and yet allow things like the situation in Bahrain to be sort of played down. We can only hope that, you know, eventually we will get some kind of redress to that, but there doesn't seem an awful lot of hope for it at the moment. We've seen a British Prime Minister going around selling more arms in the Middle East, and he's selling them to the same guys who are committing these atrocities in Bahrain.
Is it a little bit of a shame that Bahrain's taken a little bit of a backseat to what's going on in Libya? It seemed to have conveniently fallen off the pages a little bit.
Well, yes, I mean, I can be quite cynical as to why the focus is so much on Libya, whilst undoubtedly terrible things are going on there. We are still witnessing a kind of ongoing persecution in Bahrain. You know, things have not gotten better. There's still a huge demonstration going on there, mm-hmm. a huge call for change. And it's more than a shame, it's actually quite disgraceful that the international community, particularly the US and UK, have really allowed that issue to be sidetracked.
Now the Saudi army has been called in to quash the democratic uprising in a secret deal with the US. The sight of Saudi soldiers killing Bahraini protesters has led to a storm of condemnation across the world. So what's next for the people of the tiny kingdom?